Welcome to The Afterglow. The Afterglow podcast gives women, we're talking to you, the permission and tools to live life according to your own rules.
Yes, this is a platform to educate and empower women identifying humans through intriguing conversations with courageous Canadian women who are breaking down limiting beliefs and outdated rules. These women have done it, are doing it, or can provide tools for you to do the same.
We are Julie Watson
and Liz Doyle-Hermer.
And we started Afterglow, our yoga studio, after years of staying home to raise kids. Now, as podcasters, we want to help others do the same. Step into your own power. It's time to shake things up and get real about who you are and what you want.
The Afterglow is your next act. It's what came after you did what you were told and instead decided to do what was in your heart. It's how you have reinvented yourself. It's your vision for the next 40 to 50 years. It's when you took your power back.
Welcome to The Afterglow. On today's podcast, we're super excited to welcome Marilyn Bala Awayami. She's a registered social worker and psychotherapist. She is a former stay-at-home mom who currently provides virtual and in-person psychotherapy to individuals struggling with mental health issues. She lives in the Beaches with her husband and two kids. She is also a committed client at Afterglow, and she comes in and shines her glorious light weekly in our studio. And we're so excited to have her here. Welcome to the podcast. And we know you go by Bala.
Bala, that's right. Yeah. Thank you so much. I'm so excited to just have this chat with you guys.
Yeah. It's so wonderful to have you here.
Thank you.
We really loved having conversations with people we see more frequently. You know, in the beginning of this podcast, we were all, star-studded and going after, you know, some big women in Canada who were just more well-known nationally across the country.
Yeah.
But we really want to change our focus and really zero in on people who we see every day who are doing amazing things right here in our own neighborhood. So really grateful to have you on this conversation today. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about you. Where did you grow up? You know, are you from Toronto? Tell us a little bit about your childhood.
Okay. Yeah. So I was born in Nigeria in West Africa. So my father is Nigerian. My mom is Canadian. So I lived in Nigeria till I was about five. And then we came to Canada. So, you know, grew up in the suburbs in Mississauga, but I've been living in Toronto now for a while, like since university days. So, yeah.
How was that transition for you? Like coming, did you notice any, like was a real, culture shock or?
Yeah. I mean, first language, right? So we do speak, you know, we speak, it depends on what, you know, dialect, right? Or what tribe. So I spoke Yoruba when I was a child, you know, speak a little bit of English, but then there was the language transition. There was the, you know, having winter, the food, everything was a complete change. So it was.
Do you have memories of it? Do you remember?
You know what? Not really. You know, I think that because I was, you know, I've read that if you're under the age of seven, when you, you know, immigrate or have a big move, usually you don't retain as many memories, which I definitely fit that, you know, that picture. I don't have a lot of memories, but I look at the pictures and we talk quite a lot about it those days. So don't remember it well.
Do you have family there? Do you still go back occasionally to visit?
I do go back. It's a little bit difficult just politically and then having kids and just thinking about like your safety, but I have lots of family there. So I've got cousins. My dad is actually living there. The last time I was there was in 2010. So thinking about it soon, it's been a long time.
Yeah. I guess I imagine after, you know, all the pandemic and there is a lot of political unrest.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So you know, one thing I love in your bio, Bala, is that you say former stay-at-home mom, and then, you know, what you're doing now in terms of social work and psychotherapist. And I really like that. It's almost like this was your full-time job. And so you honored and respected full-time mom in the same sort of kind of category as, you know, becoming a registered social worker. So was that intentional, or like, how did you feel about those two different roles?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there's been all the different transitions. So, you know, I had my career before having kids, you know, being a full-time social worker at the Center for Addiction Mental Health here in Toronto, you know, about 5, maybe 6, 7 years and going on a mat leave and then not going back to work and then taking 5 years off to be with my kids. So there's a transition of letting that go. Even originally, I think our work is such a part of our identity, especially as women, you know, and what does it mean to not be, you know, working, right? Like paid work. So there was just really even grappling with, you know, but I want to be home with him. And, you know, at the time it was my son, right? My firstborn, but I loved my job and you know what, I'd rather do this and it's okay to do that. And then, you know, I had my daughter eventually and then coming around to, I think I'm ready to, you know, I want to be back out there. I want to like talk to people. I want to, you know, go and help people and kind of, I need that aspect of my life back. But yeah, I mean, I definitely respect, you know, women and men at home, you know, with their kids full time that it is, it's a full time job, regardless, right, of how you're doing it or what you're doing. And so, you know, here I am now where I'm kind of working more or less part time and my kids are in school. So it's been a journey, right? Like our identities just keep changing, right? As we age and we go through.
And it's definitely a full-time job. You know, I had a friend who used to say Monday's the new Friday when you go back to work, right? That is actually the weekend. And so what drew you to social work and mental health? What drew you to that field of work?
Yeah. So first off, social work is a very broad profession, right? So it can be very instrumental. You know, I worked at Michael Garron at one point when I was a student. And there you're filling out forms, you're discharging people from the hospital. It's such a range of different roles and different environments you can work in, from, you know, like doing outreach work, being on the street, right, trying to help people, working in an old folks home, right, and geriatrics. So I like that it's very diverse. And so it's, you know, not that it's easy once you're in it and you kind of do form a bit of a niche, but it's something that you can kind of change your role. So that was what drew me to it. But quite honestly, when I was in university undergrad and I was doing I started off in sciences and I thought I'd be a nutritionist and I was not liking it at all. And then I ended up going into sociology and equity studies. And it was because I had a friend at the time who was like, I think you'd be a really good therapist. And I was like, wow, really? So then I kind of pursued that. And that's what drew me to social work. So somebody, you know, kind of giving me that feedback, but also really just wanting to help people, you know, and even just personally, right? Like all of us, I think you talk to others, everybody has their stories, whether it's individually or their family members or, you know, people we know where mental health is something that, you know, is there, right? So I just wanted to make a difference. I love hearing people's stories and what they're going through and trying to help them, whether it's just coping mechanisms or finding some sort of real solutions for now.
So that helper in you, like, where does that come from? Is that innate or like, were you always that person when you were growing up and you were like, you know, that role in your friend group, or, you know, sometimes we see a lot of people go through some trauma or whatever, and then they want to turn it around. Yeah. So what was that?
Yeah, I would say it was more, I wouldn't really describe myself at a young age as a helper, right? I mean, I'm definitely very empathetic, but I don't know if I would say that I subscribe to the helper role. I think it was just more personally in my experience, you know, going through some trauma, you know, and seeing that, hey, you know what, when I was a teenager, I wish I had had some help, right? And that, you know, there are people out there, right, that can help, and wanting to be one of those people that could help others. I think whenever I thought about what I wanted to do, I wanted to help people.
Do you have a focus now? You started by saying social work was so broad and you liked that diversity. Right. There's so many places you could go. What do you have an area of focus now?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's definitely been addiction over the years. That's how I started my career at CAMH. And then I'd say over the pandemic, it's really broadened, because when you do private practice, you really have a very diverse clientele where You know, we're seeing people that are much more higher functioning than in the hospitals, but anxiety, depression, relationship problems. I do couples work. I mean, I do work with a lot of families, parents that are concerned about, you know, their children, teenagers. It's really a bit of everything, and it's very eclectic, and it's a lot of stress management. So whether that's anxiety is a big one that's really surfaced, I think, that we can all relate to, especially with the pandemic.
So you'd say that you saw a big spike after the pandemic or during and after with a lot of these stress reduction need.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because I really started working again, and I started my private practice in January 2021. So definitely in the midst of the pandemic. So, you know, there was a huge focus on the pandemic, you know, people at home, you know, not having that outlet of going to work. So feeling lonely, depressed. I'd say there was just the uncertainty of everything that was going on in the world was really anxiety for was really something that a lot of people were coming to me about with. And then interestingly enough, like couples. So maybe, you know, that haven't really been at home together for years to really face their issues and like spend that time together. So really that also surfaced, I think, for a lot of individuals is that, whoa, you know, I'm not so sure that my relationship is as strong as I'd like it to be, right?
It's definitely a pressure cooker for relationships. All the time. And I think the parenting too even speaks to that, you know, just really seeing the extra challenge on our own children. I know that's definitely something I've sought out is parenting support and strategies to support our kids in very support different kids.
Difficult for so many of us.
What do you use for your own mental health, your own mental health support?
I mean, honestly, my own mental health support, I try to apply a lot of the, you know, the strategies that I tell others to use, right? So really practicing what I preach. So I've really taken that to heart in the last year, you know, that stress management is really key, you know, to my mental health, because I do have a lot of anxiety. I would describe myself as a worrier my whole life. You know, and so just starting to like meditate, breathe, you know, in the past I was exercising much more like vigorously and like weight training and that sort of stuff. And in the last year, I've really just felt like I need that mind body connection that really I'm getting at Afterglow doing yoga classes. So that's what I do for myself is, you know, all that, like, you know, talking to myself and trying to reframe things, not personalize things. You know, I've considered, you know, even finding a therapist for myself. I've tried it out. I think that we all need someone to talk to.
Well, you mentioned your, you know, experience at Afterglow and taking classes here. And I know because I've seen your sort of transition from like more hardcore classes and then moving in. And I think, you know, I know that you like to come to the Yoga Sculpt class and other classes as well, but that's a good combination, a little bit of both, right? You're getting a little bit of both. So, so tell us a little bit more about how yoga, and you mentioned meditation, has affected you and changed your, you know, mental health.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just really being in the moment, right? Like focusing on where you, it's just very grounding. So breathing brings me to where I am, right? Instead of allowing my mind to wander and worry and all of the things on my to-do list. So that's what I mean by that mental, but physical, you know, like staying in a pose for a minute or 30 seconds and just being in your body. So it's really, for me, added some focus, some calmness. You know, meditation is the same, right? Like trying to have a morning routine where you're meditating, even if it's, I'm listening to it while I'm getting ready, right? Like just trying to implement these things in some way, but I think also not being judgmental of how I do it, right? Like even in these things, we can seek perfection. So you know, oh, well, I didn't meditate, I didn't sit and do it, or, oh, I didn't do everything in the class today, or, right, like always judging what I do or what we do. I think that's something that it's really helped me just to slow down and be like, practice more self-compassion. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of women can relate to that, needing to be perfect at things. Yeah. But that self-compassion is a really big component, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like being, you know, perfection, right? Perfectionism, which I've seen a lot in my clients, and I'd say, honestly, more women than men. Mm-hmm. Quite. Yeah. Frankly, it's more women. This need to be, you know, that we're like socially conditioned that we need to be perfect. Mm-hmm. And part of that is that we need to always be productive. So, you know, am I doing it properly? Oh, it's not as efficient. I'm not being productive, whether that's like your job or whatever we're doing, right? So really trying to just be accepting of whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so funny. As a perfectionist myself, and also someone who loves to be productive, like a to-do list, cross or offer. Yeah. I just went to the passport office this morning and I found it so stressful. And I realized a big portion of my stress was because I was worried about doing it wrong. Mm-hmm. Right. Forgetting something, not checking some box, being sent away. So I was worried about doing it wrong. And I was also worried about wasting time, like not being able to complete that task. And so it was those two things combined, you know, perfectionism and productivity, yeah, that were being challenged at the passport office. And mm-hmm. And there was a long line. So, you know, it wasn't just me, there were external factors as well. But I would love to hear, you know, some of your top tips in dealing with those two issues specifically, yeah, or perfectionism specifically.
Yeah. Yeah. So perfectionism, right? I think, like I said, the two, anxiety and perfectionism are linked, right? And the to-do lists and all of these things. And I, you know, the number one tip that I probably first start off with clients is, you know, going back and looking at, where did the perfectionist start? Can we identify, was it a teacher? Was it a parent? Or, you know, has this just always been something that, you know, you can't really pinpoint? Mm-hmm. You know, and then can we talk about that, right? Maybe it was expectations that were placed on us at a young age, right? That things had to be done a certain way. And then we've kind of carried those patterns to today. Mm-hmm. You know, so can we just, I think just allowing people to tell their story is therapeutic.
For sure. The school system didn't support us in that regard, yeah, right? Now, at least they're like, you made a mistake, you can correct it, hand it back in, and we'll revise the mark. But back then it was X wrong mistake.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and I think, you know, so it's acceptance as well. Like, I want things to be perfect, right? Like when you know, when you're working with children and you go to them and say, but it doesn't have to be perfect, that, you know, you feel like you're not being heard, right? They're like, no, but I want it to be perfect. So, you know, it's just kind of saying, I understand that you want things to be perfect, but how about we work on reframing what perfectionism is right now, given all the other stressors in your life, right? Like, things have changed from, you know, 10 years ago. We have maybe kids, we have our job, we have, you know, a parent that's not well, that we need to care for. There's so many other things that we have to do, you know, or that we want to do. And so if we can start to reframe what perfectionism even looks like, so it's not really about, we need to eliminate it as a whole, because I think truly that it's a lot of us, we just have to work on accepting that these are our part of our personality. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Brené Brown actually talks about perfectionism as the opposite of striving for excellence. Mm-hmm. So perfectionism is actually like a trauma response. Yeah. As opposed to, you know, striving for excellence and being able to accept the failure to then achieve more. So it's really interesting, mm-hmm, the sort of opposing views, which is what we think about perfectionism or being perfect, is you're just trying to do well, right? Yeah. But I think the striving for excellence is a better definition. I mean, I like to call myself a recovering perfectionist. And so I think that I am, but I know that I catch myself sometimes. But and I also you know, have done like a million years of therapy. So I know where it comes from. And it is something way back, you know, in my childhood that was like, basically I wanted to be perfect to be loved. Like, you know, that's where a lot of it comes from. And I think that you mentioned, you know, the transitions in our lives. Mm. How are we going to maintain this perfectionism when there's all these other balls being thrown at us that we need to juggle? And so how are you working through your own recovering perfectionism or perfectionism, but with being a mom, you know, taking on this role and going back to work and also prioritizing your mental health and coming to Afterglow and doing other things that work for you? Like, how are you able to juggle that? Maybe give us some tips that maybe I can do too.
Yeah. So, I mean, one of them for me, honestly, is not having to-do lists. I used to always have one on my phone.
And then there you go, like, Liz. Throw that list away.
That would be a hard one for me, for sure.
Yeah. And then the worst thing with the cell phone is you literally have it with you all the time. And then you catch yourself like, oh, you know. So I think thinking about it even visually, right? Like for me, it doesn't help me to look at that because I feel stressed. You know, so really taking each day, you know, one day at a time, right? And being more, you know, showing more compassion myself and like, how do I feel today? Like doing a check-in, a mental check-in in the, you know, in the morning and saying, okay, am I energetic? You know, do I think I can do what I thought I was going to do today? And then telling myself that, you know what, there's always tomorrow or the next week. So just kind of giving myself a little more leeway there.
Like allowing yourself to say, okay, I am not actually juggling. I'm not doing well at this. This isn't working.
To let go.
And that's okay.
Yeah, right? That it's okay. You know, I can let that go. It can wait for another day instead of this like constant fight, like that, nope, I got to get this done, right? You know, and I think with just juggling like kids, work, house, family, all of the different things that we, you know, a lot of us have, I think it's also not letting guilt, right? Not feeling selfish for like practicing self-care. So, you know, having a better understanding that I need that time for me, like whether, you know, it's that I pick up my kids an hour later at school, you know, or, you know, I ask for help from somebody. Because I need to do me. So it's really, you know, understanding that, you know, I'm not a bad mom or a bad therapist or a bad wife or a bad home, you know, housekeeper. If I take go for a walk for an hour instead of doing maybe what I thought I should be doing. So for me, it's really turning the shoulds to what I want to do. And that mentally has really helped me like be more effective and like, and even enjoying the process of what I'm doing and juggling everything. It's just part of, for me, like my stress management, you know, it just is key to the whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's huge, right? That ability to identify your needs, look after your own needs without guilt is a huge thing.
Yeah.
One of the questions we ask people, and it's, you know, the title of our podcast is The Afterglow. And one of the questions we ask people, the afterglow, we're defining it as, you know, that dream or that vision you want to pursue when you listen to your heart, when you're connected with, you know, what you really want and what you believe. And you also 100% believe in yourself. And so we're curious, we know that covers a lot, but is there an afterglow for you, something that you want to pursue when you listen to your heart and when you 100% believe in yourself?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or have pursued. Yeah.
Well, that's it. I think that, you know, when we think about the afterglow and like reinventing ourselves and what would we do if we could just pursue what we love? I feel like I've embarked on that like in the last year or so, really a lot more, kind of letting go of the idea of like, you know, oh, I'm not a good mom if, you know, I'm not there all the time, right? And that, you know, I am going to be, you know, go back to my role as a therapist because it fulfills me and that I love to help people and that that's okay. So, you know, I think I'm living it right now. I'm working through it. I'm experiencing it. And like I said earlier, it's a lot of that, you know, really inner work of like working through guilt. You know, that I'm not, you know, I'm, it's okay, right, to kind of just do me and focus on what I want to do, You know, so that's kind of where I'm at right now, is just working on my, you know, my career, my mental health, trying to achieve, honestly, I'd say maybe the afterglow is achieving balance in my life, you know, because before it was either all work or it was all kids. And now I'm kind of creating this balance that I'm really, I think is just more fulfilling for me.
I think that that's part of what our idea of the afterglow is that fulfillment for ourselves, right? And that whole idea of like when you're believing in yourself 100%. And so what can you share or offer as advice to other women who, you know, might be in a situation where you were, where they were stay-at-home moms or, you know, in a career and they're hustling all the time, or just to achieve the balance? Like what are some, you know, you already mentioned a couple of tips of how you do it, but what are some things that you would say to other women?
I mean, I would first of all say it's okay, right? Like it's okay to not maybe want to do what you're doing, that you want to make a change, whether it's that you're hustling at work all the time and you're not feeling that you're putting everything into work, but then you come home and you're not able to give your all at home, that it's okay, right? That we are, you know, we can only do so much. And it's okay to think about making a change, because I feel like the first step to making any change is that we have to accept it. We have to own it. So just, I think, validating that, you know, you maybe you're not quite where you're at right now, and that that's okay. And that there's, you know, there's lots, you know, of time, there's lots of options. Also, another thing would be to let go of all of these expectations, right? So let's identify what they are. Let's talk about them. You know, kind of, I mentioned exploring where has that come from, right? Can we kind of reason with that? And how can we like reframe that? So really, you know, starting to let go of, you know, what we've been told to do our whole lives, and really, you know, accepting where we're at this moment, I would say is a really big, big part of it, right? And that we're not, we can't do it all necessarily, and that's okay.
Yeah. So much of what you're saying, it just really feels like critical life skills, right? Mm-hmm. Stress management, being able to be with challenging thoughts. And these were not skills that many of us were taught growing up. So I'm really hearing that. And where is it if people wanted to seek you for support? I'm sure there are people who are going to want to. Where can they find you?
Yeah, so, you know, they can find me at the Restore Clinic, Restore Integrative Health, which is a lovely holistic clinic. We're located in Leslieville. And so I offer in person as well as virtual. So it can be as easy as just, you know, doing a call, right? Some people, instead of doing even a video session, they're on their phone and they're walking, you know, they're going for a walk on their lunch break. And then we have we do a session. So, you know, you can find me anywhere really. Right. And I can make myself available, you know, or we can meet in person if that's what, you know, I find some people really want to meet in person and I love that. And so we've started to, you know, provide that in the last, you know, 6 to 8 months, and it's going great again. Yeah.
I think that's a gift of the pandemic, actually, is the transition to where we used to fight, like, well, we'd only do a phone call if it was absolutely necessary, or, you know, there wasn't even the apps or whatever to set up for being online. And now we actually have the ability and it's encouraged, right? If this is what you want to do, then this is available to you. So I think that that's an amazing thing that's happened in the pandemic.
Yeah. And you know, what's interesting is I think that it's really broken down a lot of barriers for people to seek therapy. Because, you know, for a lot of people, right. It's intimidating. It's a big thing to like walk into a space, to meet someone in person. It might be a really big first step, but being in the comfort of your own home and being on a video call might be a lot easier, right? Or just having a phone call. So I think, you know, I think Julie, I mentioned it before, like I feel we have a lot to be grateful for with the pandemic, like you just access to help services. We've expanded how we can do things. And that's one of them, is that I think that barrier has kind of been taken down as well, like for seeking help and, you know, trying to work on ourselves.
I mean, you worked at like CAMH and places like that. And so how do you think the stigma around mental health has changed? If it's changed, you feel like it's actually shifting?
I feel like it is, because I feel that people are being a lot more open about it. I think that the pandemic definitely created a space where people were talking more about mental health, you know, using different language maybe than in the past, right? Like, we've heard people talk about languishing, you know, just loneliness, right? Like, not being needing, having that need to socialize. So however we wanted to frame it, I think that it's really been a positive change in that respect, that, you know, even insurance companies have now increased some of their benefits for people to seek supports. So I'm hoping
that's a good tip.
Yeah.
Bala, you mentioned before, for most teenagers, your teenager years being a challenging time. Yeah. And one of the questions we ask is, what would you say to your 15-year-old self? So I'm curious about that. What would you say to that younger version of you?
I mean, that it's going to be okay, right? Like, we don't need to worry so much, right? Like, everything will work itself out. You know, and I think that lends to also how patient of a person we are, right? But like I said earlier, I tend to be a worrier. I want things like immediately. I want to know what's my plan, because I'm a recovering perfectionist, right? So I'd say just that, you know, it's all right, you know. There's no need to worry, right? And that worrying doesn't accomplish anything, right? And that, you know, things just kind of work themselves out, right? Mm-hmm. I know that that's hard, you know, if you're to tell a teenager that, you know, that's really difficult to believe. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think so much of what you have said today is so relatable. Like, you know, just even bringing in the ideas of how to conquer a little bit of your perfectionism, and also, you know, even talking about everything is going to be okay. Now, we have these extreme experiences in our lives that they're not okay in those moments, but that, you know, our lives, they do, you know, in retrospect, we're always looking back going, oh, why did I worry so much? Why was I thinking about that so much? And obviously, you know, you bringing tools and your own experience to this is so helpful, I think, to so many people, but so many women who are, you know, majority of our listeners. Yeah. And so what are like some of your favorite books or authors or podcasts or like that you take from, that you draw from, that you listen to, that you could share with our listeners that they could maybe, you know, check out?
I mean, right now, you know, that's the thing, is I try to read a little bit of everything, and then I don't often get through it. So I have a lot of books that I'm reading. They're more professional, like motivational interviewing. There's one book, I don't know the author right off the bat, but it's called Stolen Focus, which was recommended to me by a friend. And it's been really interesting. It's really about how we have, you know, as a society, lost the ability to focus, right? With social media and all of the things that are, you know, that are just being constantly thrown at us. And, you know, especially with becoming more interested in meditation and mindfulness, I find it really intriguing, you know, and thinking about how can I regain my focus, you know, to really enjoy whatever I am doing. Because, you know, when we talk so much about happiness and how can we achieve happiness, you know, if it can just be in just really being in the moment with whatever we're engaged in. So that's been an interesting book. You know, as far as podcasts, I've definitely listened to yours, Afterglow. You know, there's another one, I can't remember the name right now, but I listen to a lot of parenting podcasts. So along those lines of, you know, let's just let go of the guilt. The kids are going to be okay. You know, just, you know, things about like helicopter parenting, over parenting, things like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And we can, you know what, if you send us those later, we can put them in the show notes so others can learn. The author of Stolen Focus is Johan Hari. And I think, I mean, I would love to read that. So that is an exciting, you know, my next book, which I also read portions of and then leave the stack on my bedside table too.
And the parenting, sorry to interrupt, the parenting podcast is the Happiness Lab.
The Happiness Lab. Oh, yeah.
Is that more geared towards young? I'm curious, just because I have teenagers as well as younger kids, but is that more geared towards younger kids or does it scan the ages?
It's not even about, you know, children in university and like dropping off, you know, essays that they left at home and just all sorts of things.
So like, don't do that. Like, don't drop off the essay, which I have been so guilty of enabling my children. Okay. That's a whole other podcast. So we're going to have to like come back and do like a parenting, helicopter parenting podcast one day. I think that that would be really helpful because I've been an enabler my whole parenting career. But that's helpful.
I dropped off a water bottle and a stuffy this morning because I forgot it was PJ and stuffy. Yeah.
Right? Well, that is not as bad as telling your kid it is PJ day and setting them in their pajamas and it's not.
This has been so nice and so enlightening, and I love learning about the people that we see every day. And so thank you so much, Bala, for joining us today on the Afterglow and sharing your, you know, vulnerability and your stories with us.
Thank you. It's been fun.
That's a wrap for this episode of the Afterglow. Yet another courageous Canadian sharing her vision.
Do us a favor and lift a sister up by sharing this podcast with others who want to find their afterglow. And let us know, what do you want to hear about? Who do you want to hear from? And what is your afterglow? Slide on into our DMs at The Afterglow Podcast Official and leave us a message.
Did you love this podcast? Be sure to like and rate us on Spotify and iTunes and wherever you tune in. Until next time.